Welcome along to the Short Ball Rugby Pass Podcast. Scotty Stevenson and Mills Muliaina joining you this week as we look ahead to the second Bledisloe Cup contest, the second round of the Rugby Championship. Millsy, how bad were the Wallabies?
Bad. I mean, what I'm talking bad is in the good sense. Like the new age kids would say, bad. It's bad.
No, they weren't bad. No. They were bad.
They were like shite.
Yeah, they weren't Michael Jackson bad.
Mate, they were far from being Michael Jackson bad, I'll tell you right? that.
Yeah, on a scale of Michael Jackson to Weird Al Yankovic, I'm going Weird Al. They were Weird Al.
They've probably gone past. They've gone past Weird Al, mate. Weird Al.
They're down to the ketchup song. I don't understand what's going on there. 4 weeks they had to prepare for that game. Some people say maybe the 4 weeks off is the problem. No game time, no footy, no competition, unlike the vast majority of that All Black team who had played semi-finals, finals footy and Super Rugby. I don't buy that. You've got time.
No, I don't buy that either. If anything, they had the better preparation. You know, 4 weeks of actually coming back, they would have had a week or so to sort of digest what had happened in Super Rugby. And then they're into it. You know, a sole focus on this one game, this, you know, being at home and getting themselves off to a good start so they can actually try and win back the Bledisloe Cup. But instead, we just... The best thing about that first 40 from the Australians' part was the stare down after the haka.
Oh, mate, they won the national anthem, hands down.
Easily.
Yeah, this is one of the greatest national anthem singing performances I've ever seen from a rugby team. But, I'm sorry. Like, then the whistle blows and they're custard.
I know. I think we spoke about it a week or so ago. We're like, we actually want them to be competitive.
I
thought they might be a little bit better than that, but I don't know. I mean, who knows what's going to happen this weekend? You know, just, you know, the All Blacks being at home, they'll want to keep that cup. And so, if anything, you know, they're probably going to come out better than what they were last week.
Well, on the Short Ball today, we're going to discuss Bledisloe Cup action, first test reaction, and a look ahead to the second test as well. The South Africans getting off to winning ways as well. I'm a bit nervous about the Springboks. I think they could be the dark horses of this competition. We're also going to touch on the Mitre 10 Cup, New Zealand's provincial championship is underway. Fantastic first round action from the Kiwi domestic competition, and also the Women's World Cup. The finalists have
fantastic. Fantastic only because the Tani Fars won, right?
Yeah. Damn straight.
What the? Hey. You can't just classify as fantastic just because the Tani Fars won, mate.
Hey, that is our second win in 2 years. You think I'm not going to get excited about that?
Yeah, I suppose when you put it that way.
They were 23 points to 7 down. Well, they came back and won the game.
Absolutely fantastic start to the Mitre 10
Thank
Cup.
You. Are you just upset because Waikato got hammered and your province of birth, Southland, got hammered?
Oh, the Waikato, I thought they won.
No, they didn't win.
No,
they got beat.
Okay.
They got beat.
Damn.
You know what, Millsy? We can always talk about this from a New Zealand point of view, but we're going to get hold of the J-ball. One of the great Australian minds when it comes to rugby, Jable Staunton, the voice of Queensland Club Rugby, a noted hooker in his day, and a man who lives and breathes Wallabies footy. And look, I can tell you, he was fairly disappointed.
G'day,
Jable. Sumo and Mills here. How are you, son?
Very well, guys. How are we going?
Look, let's be honest, mate. You finished Saturday night in the fetal position, sucking your thumb, wondering how it all went so wrong.
No, I wasn't wondering how it all went so wrong. I'm pretty much across it and
Don't
know exactly why.
What went wrong? What went wrong, J-Boy?
Well, I remember last week I said, how are the Wallabies going to win this one? I said the All Blacks need to take them lightly. Yeah, they didn't take them lightly. I think they were stinging a bit from the Lions tour and came out and just gave the Wallabies what for as a result. So, bloody hell.
Yeah, I tell you what, your media spent the whole week talking about who the All Blacks had been shagging and they came out and humped you blokes. I mean, that's that's got to be the most ironic thing of all.
Yeah, I know. It's bloody terrible. At least they're getting some play, I suppose.
Hey, Jable, in a serious point, though, I mean, defensively in that first half, I don't think I've ever seen a weaker Wallaby display, and it wasn't just the one-on-one tackling. They missed 22 of them in the first half. It was the entire defensive setup. Why have you got four blokes hanging on the short side defending one player? Is that just out-and-out laziness, or is that players who just can't get to grips with Nathan Gray's defensive setup?
I honestly don't know. I mean, all you've heard, you know, since Saturday is, you know, what defensive structures are they playing? Because it seems that every set piece, it's different. You know, you've got Curtis Rona starting at 10, and then the next one, depending on where they are in the field, he might be at outside centre. And then it's just, I honestly am sort of trying to wrap my head around it. And the worst thing they can possibly do, though, is try and go back to something else. It's one of those things, you're stuck in a bit of a catch-22. You've got to, I mean, you've trained together for a month now on these systems. You can't really try and change anything right now just because it didn't work out. It seemed almost as if they just met in the change rooms before the match and then ran out to try and play some footy together. So as long as they can sort of stick together doing their structures, I guess you've got to give it, you know, the time it warrants. But, you know, it's tough to sort of see it working, at least at these early stages, I suppose.
I mean, do you take any confidence in that from that last, do they take any confidence from that last sort of 30 or 40 odd minutes in the second half? I mean, the positives for me really is actually Israel Folau. You know, I mean, I feel sorry for the guy. You know, he's making inroads out wide. As hard as it may seem, he's probably the only positive you can actually take out of it. But can the Aussies actually take something out of that last 30 or so minutes where they scored a few tries from, I suppose, the All Blacks' mistakes?
I mean, it's tough to say because you can't help but think, you know, people say that the All Blacks never take their foot off the throat, but that's just a straight-up lie. Every team does it all the way from under sixes up to, you know, the All Blacks and Wallabies and so on. It can happen to anyone, and I think that's evidenced big time by Saturday. So, look, I think they can, you know, take a few positives. They did attack well. They started to get their defensive structures a bit better, and I think to be the Kurundrani made a massive...
he was huge.
Massive difference there. Like, I mean, defensively, he's easily the best defensive outside centre in Australia. So I think he'll be the one that'll be coming up and starting this weekend if there are any changes, which there should be. But I guess the only positive can really be is that, you know, if you stick to the structures, it can sort of fall your way. Yeah. But again, you know, we can't rely on the Kiwis switching off to have any chance of getting up because it was, 56-6 at one stage or 54-6 at one stage, you know?
Yeah, no, the game's done and dusted at that point. The other problem I guess you have, Jabor, from an Australian point of view, is that this was supposed to be the game that could heal all the wounds. And now, after taking that sort of punishment, all the wounds are bleeding. The Western Force, campaigning.
Bleeding out a few million dollars, though,
about suing the Australian Rugby Union. You're doing a club final on Saturday, and mate, I loved you. You posted on Facebook this week, and I really loved it. It really resonated with me, and I think it just explained to me the problem that Australian rugby has. I mean, you're a massive club rugby fan, Jay, and you've called a lot of games up in Queensland this year. You had your Queensland final this weekend. Great boisterous crowd, a lot of fun. It's grassroots of the game. You know, your guys running the game over there have no idea what's going on at club level, have no idea about the groundswell of support, as is evidenced by what we saw at Ballymore and what we're seeing over in Perth at the moment. Change has got to happen at the top, doesn't it?
It does. I mean, in that Facebook post, I said, you know, to be able to rectify this, the top of Australian rugby is, you know, twisted and broken, but, you know, the grassroots, the foundations are still as strong as ever. So, you know, it's not as if the game is dying. It's just sick and injured, and it's not in the place it needs to be, but it doesn't mean that it's, you know, a complete write-off. So, I mean, it's just funny to see. I saw, you know, a video or something the other day of Bill Pulver saying, you know, club rugby is not on par with the Wallabies and nor will it ever be. And that's not the point. That's not the argument we're making. The argument we're making is that there's one game in Australia that is actually working, and that is grassroots footy. That is club rugby.
Yeah.
You know, that's the only one that's currently working. Super Rugby isn't. The Wallabies aren't. So why not look to see what is actually working, see what's actually working for them, and then look to try and implement that change in the higher ups, you know? So
Here, Jay. That's exactly
funny
right.
To see.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, I don't know where they think the next bunch of players are going to come from out of the NRL when they get kicked out of a team, is it? Is that what's going to happen, or we're just going to pick up a couple of boys from Tonga just to fill in the midfield?
God, I hope not.
Yeah, you know...
Curtis Rona played like a busted asshole on
Sorry, give a guy a debut in that game.
He's just dreamed a bit too
long. Hey, J-Ball, he grew up in New Zealand dreaming of wearing the gold jersey, mate. Come on, don't crush him. Don't crush him like Jared Hayne. Every kid's got to have a dream. Jay, we go to Dunedin this weekend. Look, I know the coverage has been pretty dark over there following that test match loss in Sydney, but, I mean, is there a ray of hope? Is there a sliver? Is there a sliver of something that Wallabies fans can hold on to this week heading under the roof at Forsyth Bar?
Well, I mean, to be brutally honest, I don't really think there is. All there is that there's hope that it can't get much worse. You know what I mean? So, and that's look, I'm a dyed-in-the-wool Wallabies supporter, always will be. But you've got to be a realist, and you've got to be able to pinpoint when a game, is without, not within your reach. But the biggest thing is that as long as we can see them busting their ass on the field, you know, that's easily the most important aspect of it. And, you know, that's one of the more heartening things is that you do see guys giving it their all. You know, your Adam Coleman's, even Curtly Beale gave it a red hot crack. At least when you can see that, you know that it's not an issue there. It's just some more intangible things really outside of, you know, the rectangle on the park that really is playing a massive part in, I suppose.
Good as gold, mate. Well, yep, have a look at that game. You think it can't get any worse. You've just described me looking in the mirror every morning, Jay Bor. So thanks for bringing that up. Always a pleasure to talk to you. Jay Staunton out of Brisbane, the king of the brown snake. Follow him on Instagram and get into some YP threads. Thanks, Jay Bor.
Cheers, fellas. Have a good one.
Cheers, mate.
Yeah, look, the man's a realist, and that's what I love about him. But he's also a massive fan. Yeah. And this is the problem for Australian rugby right now. Yeah, they've got so much talent. But as soon as it goes up through the grades into the franchise and to international level, it seems to be so disconnected from what they have going on at the local level, at the community level of their game. They have got to find a way.
Yeah.
And it's all very well to sit in a glass house and throw stones. Yeah, exactly. New Zealand's got its own issues around connectivity with the community game as well.
Exactly.
But nowhere is it more apparent that they have just dropped the ball than in Australian rugby right now.
Well, I don't understand it. I mean, it's clear for everyone to see. You know, their grassroots rugby is massive. And is someone not actually going to watch these games and seeing what's going on in grassroots? I mean, you're right. We have got our own issues here in New Zealand, but at least we've still got, you know, the Mitre 10 Cup is feeding out some spectacular players.
Mm.
The Australians, just is it from a commercial point of view they're looking at things? Is it because they're sort of running out of money?
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, what is it? You know, and that's what they got to get down to the nitty gritty of, you know?
Yeah,
sort it out.
Obviously, at the top level of the game in Australia, rugby union is not even in the conversation.
No.
When it comes to NRL, AFL, A-League now, women's AFL, proposed women's NRL,
the netball
competition, which is now supported wholeheartedly by the AFL clubs.
Yeah.
You know, rugby union needs to have something. And if it can't compete at that professional level, then surely it's got to look downwards and say, let's build up our base again.
Yeah.
And go from bottom up instead of trying to be hypodermic and say, let's have success here. You're not having any.
Yeah.
You're not getting the broadcast dollars. You don't get the followers. Yeah. So you can't go top down there at the moment. Yeah. You've got to come back up.
Yeah.
And that, I think that's the issue that frustrates a lot of guys like Jay, a lot of other supporters, a lot of people you talk to in the Australian game. They don't feel like the Board of Australian Rugby has any idea or any connection with what they're doing every Saturday on the footy field or in the club or in the grandstand.
Yeah, and connection's the one. You know, the one thing that you're talking about. The guys that are actually down there, I suppose, and that's probably one of the biggest positives about the Australian, what's going on in Australia, is that they've still got diehard people, diehard fans, like Jay Ball, and that want the game to be successful. Now, you know, do they need to take a few steps backwards to get themselves, you know, back up? Of course they do. They need to come right back down, give themselves some time and rebuild rugby in Australia. Whether that takes 1, 2, 5 years, you know, who knows? But the way they're going at the moment, you know, no one's going to follow, the Wallabies in 2 to 3 years' time if they keep producing results like this.
And that's a massive shame for me. And it's a nice segue into Bledisloe 2, the second round of the Rugby Championship this weekend. From a New Zealand point of view, of course, the All Blacks taking on the Wallabies once more at Forsyth Bar Stadium. You're on the Short Ball with Scotty Stevenson and Mills Mulioina, a Rugby Pass podcast. This was Australia's opportunity. One in Sydney, one in Dunedin, one in Brisbane. It was their big moment.
Yeah.
No Auckland, no Eden Park, no win since 1986, none of the hoodoo, none of the drama. This was the moment. They go under the roof. If there's one consolation about playing under the roof, it's that it's open, free-running footy. And they've got the back line to do that. Only problem is the All Blacks have got a guy like Ryan Crotty who is playing the house down.
Yeah, is he? What?
I love Ian Foster came out this week, and thank God someone said it, and said, look, he's more than just a fill-in.
Yeah.
We talked about that on Saturday night in the post-match show. Yeah. This kid is playing the house down, Ryan Crotty. He has become the most important member of every back line he plays for.
That's definitely it, Sumo. It's every back line he plays for. You know, when he's been out with the in the Crusaders lineup, when he's had injuries, they don't go too well. When he's been out from the Lions tour, when he sort of went down with his hammy, was out, what happened? You know, didn't function as well. Now, in the weekend, he was just spectacular. His defensive role on attack, he just adds that extra sort of voice to Beauden Barrett and sort of settles things. Now, yeah, he's often labelled as the guy that sort of is just the fix-it man, but he's actually gone beyond that. You know, he's actually you know, busting through some gaps, making big hits, and turning over ball in crucial times. Now, you know, he is to me the best All Black player so far this year.
Let's break this down even further. Here's a guy who played his entire Super Rugby campaign at 12, went out there on Saturday night, was the best player on the park at 13.
Yeah.
I mean, tell me another midfielder at the moment who can so easily switch between those two roles, because as you know, there are differences in what you have to do in both.
Oh, massive differences. And the one thing that did sort of stand out to me was that try, that you know, that counterattack try where I can't remember who it was, the first try of the game, where it was a kick. And who was back there? You know, it's the centre's jobs to get back and get out to the width of the park. And now, when they chucked that ball in, the only guy that was seemed to be back was Ryan Crotty. Mm. You know, he went through that line, busted in, and they got some quick ball to enable the guys out wide to actually score. And it was Liam Squire that actually benefited from it. And so, when you've got a guy that sort of just does his role every single, you know, match, regardless of whether he's playing 12, 13, or wherever, that's the sort of guys you want in test match footy, because they don't ever make mistakes, and they live for the big time moments, and he certainly did on Saturday.
Let's talk about the squid, Liam Squire. I'm glad you brought him up. Is this the end for Jerome? Is that it? That sort of commanding performance from a number six. You know, this was Jerome's jersey, has been for a lot of years now, two World Cups in it. He's obviously had to go home for personal reasons, but Liam Squire, I think, took his opportunity with both hands. Is Jerome Kaner now sitting there thinking, this might be it for me?
Well, I think the two guys that started for the very first, start of the game, you know, Squire and also McKenzie, they both took the opportunities. Mm. You know, they took it to another level. You know, Squire has always been great. You know, possibly, you know, a few years back, Jerome was similar when he burst into the scenes. You know, ranged out wide, can beat backs easily. Squire's doing it, so a younger version. And man, was he physical on the weekend? He sort of balanced his game up, being physical and also roaming around. But you know, played a lot like you know, in the outside channels that Kieran Reid predominantly does. So it enabled Reader to get in there, do a little bit more sort of hard graft, which is probably what he's been wanting to do. So is it the end of Jerome? I don't think it's quite the end of it, but certainly we've got, you know, a guy that can easily fill that place and possibly go on to claim that number six jersey, which is good. Great competition, Tumo.
I agree with that. 100% kicking for the South Africans against Argentina on the weekend. 37 points they scored, 4-2 against the Argentinians. They didn't run a lot of metres. And that's the thing that concerns me about this South African performance. They ran fewer metres than any other team in the TRC, including the team they beat, Argentina. It almost seems like it's two steps forward, one step backwards with the South Africans. They have the talent, they've got the victory, but just on running metres alone, I do look at that and I think, really? I mean, you know, have we quite just got over that final hurdle out of Kutsia's conservatism?
Yeah, and that's it. I think and when you're sort of compare that to what the Lions and the Sharks have been doing all season. They kind of are they gone back now to being conservative? We all know how well they can actually play that expansive game and run the ball from wherever if they've got the guys to believe in it. Now they've gotten, you know, back being with some of the other guys in a Springbok environment. Are they going conservative just because it's purely test match? And I hope they haven't.
Yeah.
And I hope it's just the start and trying to feel their way through the championship. But certainly they can actually play the open game.
Do you know, they held onto the ball for 20 minutes. They had 20 minutes in possession, which in rugby terms is quite staggering. The average time in possession for both teams combined in a game of footy is about 34, 35 minutes.
Sharks,
20 minutes in that game, they're in charge of that ball for 380 running metres.
Yeah, see, that's not much at all. That is...
That's great defence, I guess. 133 tackles that the Argentinians made. But by the same token, the South Africans still made 125. So, you know, what are they doing with the amount of ball they had? That's of concern to me, and it has been for a long time with the Springboks.
Yeah, and perhaps because they're playing the Argentinians, you know, similar sort of players, you know, big and strong, they perhaps wanted to just sort of try and win the physical battle, you know?
Did they have a cock contest? Is they measuring up? Well, happens.
It does, mate. And perhaps that's possibly where they, you know, their tactics went to. The fact that let's hold on to the ball and try and bash the crap out of these guys who think they can play similar style to us. But boring.
No. But no.
Yeah.
I agree with that. What do you think? I mean, is this going to come down to New Zealand, South Africa? Are we on the verge? You know, for all we've just said about what we saw from South Africa and maybe the limitations on attack, is this going to be the year in which the Springbok All Black rivalry is revived?
I think it could possibly be. I think if the South Africans can muster up something, you know, similar to what they've been playing in Super Rugby, you know, across all their teams. I mean, you even talk about the Stormers. Mm. You know, they were even sort of the open play was magnificent as well. So nice. Between the Stormers, the Sharks, and the Lions, you know, this could be the year that the Springboks sort of, you know, open up. So I'm looking forward to them. They're playing in Argentina this week. That's always a difficult place to go and play for the Springboks. So, you know, a lot about how they're going to end up this year will come down to this game, I reckon.
One interesting point, one final point about the opening round of the Rugby Championship. Top 10 tacklers this weekend. Five of them were Kiwis.
Five
of the top 10 tacklers in the competition in a team that put 54 points on the opposition were Kiwis. Sam Kane made 25 tackles.
Yeah.
25 tackles.
Yeah.
That is an insane figure for anyone.
Yeah.
Can we stop the discussion about Kane now? Can we just park it and say he's a freak?
How's that? We've just put on how many points against the Australians? Probably possibly played the best 40 or 50 minutes in All Black history.
It's got to be up there. It's got to be in the conversation.
Not one mention of Sam Kane. You know, not one. So, I mean, then you pull out...
What is wrong with people with this guy? I mean, is there just a... Can we just not get over the McCaw?
He hasn't got the looks of McCaw, possibly. He needs to take that tape off.
Sam Kane needs to go get a helicopter license and an honorary wing commander's role with the Air Force, and then he's good to go.
Exactly.
He's good to go. Let's move on to the Mitre 10 Cup. You're on the short ball with Millsy and Sumo. And Mitre 10 Cup, I've got to be honest with you, player of the round for me was a Tasman loose forward called Shannon Frizzell, carried 20 times in the game against Canterbury in a losing effort.
Yeah.
Tasman got wiped, melted by the Cantabs, 39 points to nil.
Yeah.
But that, to me, is a kid with a big future. Scored in the final last year for Tasman. He's come back and he looked the goods playing eight for the Markwall in a losing effort. He was mine to watch. What about for you? What stood out for the opening round?
Well, obviously, the Tanifars.
Yes!
That was pretty impressive. But
Spend the next 20 minutes talking about how wonderful Northern Rugby is?
Mate, you just said you won two games in the last what?
Yeah, exactly.
3 or 4 years.
But what a way to win. And, mate, we may have lost lots, but we lose beautifully. So there's always a no, carry on, Millsy.
No, I thought, actually, I looked, because I was watching Southend, I thought Carter Vanga was very good. In conditions like that, the Hawke's Bay team were actually, to me, I was pretty impressed with, considering they also had someone in the bin. The one thing that did annoy me was how many times they had to reset the damn scrums.
Scrum issues?
Mate, it just bored the crap out of me. I actually felt like sort of turning switching the channel, but I didn't. You know, so I suppose it's possibly because I don't know what the heck's going on. But if the refs just give a penalty, just who cares? Just give it to, you know, I don't know. Just take a big guess. That's what they do anyway, isn't it? Hey? Isn't it? Is when it gets too hard, I just give a penalty.
This is the contest, Millsy. I mean, don't you love the old school nature of a scrum contest? I mean, doesn't it thrill you standing at the back all those years thinking about reset after reset, having to rechange your backline call every time the scrum went down?
All I hear from the refs is make the gap smaller. And then all of a sudden it's a bit bigger. And then it's like someone's not binding. And then, I mean, how can you actually tell who's done something wrong there from, you know, from a collapsed scrum?
Oh, I don't know. But the referees obviously think they've got a handle on. I want to talk about one player, one more player while we're on the Mitre 10 Cup. And don't forget, Ramfilly Shield's on the line this week. The first official Ramfilly Shield challenge of the year. Otago taking on Canterbury. They're going to get hammered.
Who?
Otago.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, that was their North Harbour game. Oh, man, that was...
You said it was yuck.
You said it was shit.
It was yuck.
Yeah.
Asafo Almua, the New Zealand under-20s hooker. Did you watch him on Sunday?
No, I didn't.
You should have. In fact, I'm just gonna get you a highlight tape of Asafo Almua. He leads the competition in try assists. Two of them against Manawatu two in a winning effort. He should have scored a couple of tries on his own, but he's not a hungus.
Yeah.
The kid must have put together about 800 running meters on his own. Can you picture Kevin Mialamu breeding with Dane Coles and creating a super hooker baby?
This is him.
That's him.
And he's coming to the Blues too, isn't he?
Mm.
Oh.
Yeah.
Damn.
This is a kid who has to sit behind three hookers at the Hurricanes, can't even get a crack at the Canes. And his first game back for Wellington this year, remember on his debut last year, he scored a hat-trick.
Yeah.
Then he goes to the under-20s, lights it up, wins the World Cup, comes back, opening game of the season. This season, he is on fire.
Yeah, and that's what's sort of exciting about the Mitre 10 Cup.
Yes.
You know, the guys that sort of have already had a taste, you know, all of a sudden they get another year and they just sort of, you actually try and see whether they sort of bolster and sort of push on. I mean, and then you sort of mix it up with a few of the guys in their first years and all of a sudden it's a damn good competition, I tell you that, Sumo.
Well, I love it. And there's always something freaky that's going on. There's always a great play. There's always some great rivalries. I say it time and time again, year after year. It is the one place you can let your hair down and actually just celebrate footy. Mm. None of the pressure of the franchise code, none of the media scrutiny of international game.
Yeah.
It's pure rugby, isn't it?
It is pure. And you're probably possibly seeing a lot of the Super Rugby players and, you know, also some of the All Blacks that are coming back from injury. You know, Nicky Milner-Scudder played in the weekend. You know, they enjoy it a little bit more. You know, there's not that sort of, I wouldn't say burden, or sort of weight on their shoulders to have to, you know, do something. They just go out there and just sort of have a bit of fun, you know. So it's fantastic.
Quick fire for you. Game starts 24th of August. That's tomorrow night, New Zealand time. I'm going to go through, give you the names. You're going to pick a winner.
Yeah.
We're going to do this in 15 seconds. Ready? Here we go. 3, 2, 1. Southland Harbour.
Southland.
Bay of Plenty, Hawke's Bay.
Hawke's Bay.
Waikato Counties.
Waikato.
Wellington Taranaki.
Wellington.
Auckland Northland.
The Taniwha.
Yeah, boy. Manawatu Tasman.
Manawatu.
And Canterbury Otago Ramfilly Shield.
Oh, mate, Canterbury, bro. I think Canterbury.
See, look how you hate it. You hate saying Crusaders. You hate saying Canterbury. This is like the worst season for you ever.
If you rewind this camera, I do not hate it.
You hate saying it.
I even hate it.
We're going to move on. We'll save the best to last on the short ball today, the Women's Rugby World Cup. Black Ferns will take on England, the final everyone thought would be the final.
Yeah.
Black Ferns trailed the US in the semi-final this morning. I don't think the end score, though, really reflects the US's effort. Too easy for the Ferns, ultimately. Meanwhile, it was tenser than a body sculptor's butt cheek in the other semi between England and France. My God, what a game. 3-0 at halftime. What is it?
I thought, it's the Frenchies, eh? They had the knack of sort of knocking off the bloody favourites, eh, in the World Cup.
That's it. England get through. They sneak through to face the Black Ferns. If this was a game based on pure individual skill, the Black Ferns win this game.
Yeah.
But as we saw in June, England's set piece is going to be the biggest concern for the Black Ferns. If they can get control of possession and they can dictate the tempo of the game, this is still going to be a massive ask for the Black Ferns. Doesn't matter how many tries they've scored, how wonderful they've played, it's going to come down to rolling balls and scrums and lineouts.
Yeah, and the tries they have scored has been because they've dominated up front. But the English forward pack, they are massive, and they know how to moor, they know how to sort of scrum, and so, you know, if they can get parity up there, which I suspect the girls would have been thinking about that Rotorua game a long time ago.
That's all they've thought about,
and that's all they've sort of wanted. So, you know, there's no doubt they're going to have motivation going into this game to actually get parity up front. If they can do that, man, you know, it's nothing better than seeing like Portia Woodman and co. sort of scoring tries out wide.
This really is, to me, the first Women's Rugby World Cup that has had the benefit of such a wide-reaching social media platform to boost its profile. And what I have seen has been nothing short of a transformation in the game. I mean, we've always seen wonderful women's players, but this has been 3 weeks of endless highlight reels showing just how far the skill development in the women's game has come and just how intense the competition has become. Look, I know there's been some blowout scores, as there always are in World Cups, men's or women's, but this has been a high-energy, high-tempo, beautifully played World Cup, and I think this should be really the marker now for the future of the women's game. If they cannot boost the game off the back of what we have seen in this World Cup, then we've got a massive problem, and we've got a massive problem of will, not of talent.
Yeah, exactly, Sumo. And I think that the talent that you're saying, I mean, the skill level has been amazing. I mean, not just, I suppose, you know, the catch pass and things, but they're actually kicking goals from 40 or 50 metres out, some of these women. And I'm just like, far out. That's, you know, this game has just transferred to something different. So you're absolutely right. If they can, you know, sort of build from this, then I think the women's game is just going to grow, you know, massively. And at the moment, you know, all we're talking about the women's game growth wise is sevens.
Yep.
But if they can get this right, and they've started that, then 15s is just going to be huge.
So here's this conversation that we had during the Lions and writing for Rugby Pass. You know, what would be wrong with the Lionesses tour concurrently?
Yeah.
And that gets shot down because people say, oh, there's no money, there's no sponsorship, there's no hunger for it. You've got Six Nations currently at the moment for women in the game, and although the English women are going through their own professional contracting nightmare with the RFU, at least that's up and running.
Yeah.
Nothing like it in the Southern Hemisphere.
No.
No concurrent Super Rugby competition, no concurrent Rugby Championship for women, nothing, nothing.
Yeah, that's disappointing,
I cannot believe for a second in the billions and billions of dollars invested in women's advertising and women's products, that there is not a hunger to be a key sponsor of women's rugby. I cannot believe that.
Yeah.
If you are telling me that there is no money and that there is no hunger for it, then you're not looking hard enough.
No.
Because there has got to be.
Yeah.
If some of the teams in the men's game can get sponsorship and they play like a bag of assholes, then the women playing at this level of the game should be able to be sponsored, should be able to find cash, should be able to find an audience.
Well, exactly. I mean, if you have competitions like that are sort of, you know, beside each other, why couldn't you do that? You have a Lions tour, you have the women's playing the curtain raiser, and you line that up the same way you would the championship. That's marketing.
And let's just say double header. Let's get away from the curtain raiser full stop.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Double header. That's a good way to put it, actually, as well. So, I mean, from a marketing point of view, that's huge, you know. And you sort of lead into the build up the whole sort of both games. And why couldn't you do that?
AFL's doing it. NRL wants to do it. In fact, they've lost sponsors because they haven't gone fast enough on it.
Huh.
The netball competition in Australia is being run, as we spoke to JB about, by AFL clubs.
Mm.
Everyone else in the professional game in this part of the world is looking for ways to attract and support women playing and participating in their club environments. I know we've got the Farrah Palmer Cup, God bless it, but where is our international equivalent of the Six Nations in the Southern Hemisphere?
Yeah, I mean, it would be a different story if we didn't have enough numbers, you know, but we have, you
Please.
Know, we've got plenty of numbers Please. Here. So, and also, we're not just talking just in New Zealand. I mean, the Australians are there as well, South Africans. So, I mean, there's plenty of participation numbers, which is something that often in the past you didn't have.
Dare to dream, Millsy. That'll do it for now. That's the short ball for another week. Don't forget, catch all the Rugby Championship action. Hope you got your Rugby Pass fantasy team up and running as well. Millsy, we don't want to talk about ours. We got dusted up on the weekend, by the way.
I was hoping you wouldn't mention that.
No, I just don't want to do it anyway. Catch all the action every single minute live on rugbypass.com.